This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about how the pandemic has impacted one of Indiana's most vulnerable populations. Homeless shelters have had to halt, pivot, and adapt services and programming amid COVID-19, and they've taken many different approaches to changing how they do things to keep their residents, staff, and volunteers safe. Today, we'll check in with representatives from three Indiana homeless shelters to hear how things are going. Steve Kerr is Executive Vice President of Advancement at Wheeler Mission in Indianapolis. Steve, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Natalie Stafford is Wheeler Mission's Director of Volunteers. Hello, Natalie.
Hello. So glad to be here. Thank you.
Glad to have you. Tracy Gorman is President and CEO of Evansville Rescue Mission. Welcome, Tracy.
Hello, Matt. Thanks for having me today.
Steve Madison is Director of Ministry Partnerships at Hope Ministries in South Bend. Welcome to you, Steve.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And we would love to hear from you today as well. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana and leave a question or comment, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We'd love to hear your voice in the conversation today. So record your message for the panel at 866-476-3881. Steve Kerr, we'll talk to you first. Take us back to late in the winter when we started to hear how COVID-19 was spreading into the United States. Was Wheeler Mission preparing at that time?
No, not really. We had heard that the dangerous part would be the flu and that COVID would not be all that much to deal with. And then March, we realized that the COVID thing was for real, and we had to begin taking steps to mitigate risk to protect our guests. So it probably wasn't until March that we really ramped up our COVID thoughts and processes at Wheeler Mission. And from that point forward, it was just full steam ahead to try to mitigate risk and protect our staff and guests against COVID-19.
As I would imagine, that has evolved a lot since then. I mean, as it has for so many of us. What did it look like initially, and then how did it change over time in those early days?
Yeah, we had at any given time, we would have, and I'm going to speak for a few minutes of just our men's emergency shelter. That's the biggest service area that we have. Not uncommon for us to have 400, 450 men in a day room, literally shoulder to shoulder. And of course, social distancing was just a catchphrase at that time, something we were just learning about. And we realized that was impossible for us to social distance that many men in a single room. So we began working with churches, the city of Indianapolis, and the Marion County Board of Health to figure out ways to reduce the number of men in our day room to protect them. So the first thing we did was we contacted a church who had already suspended services, and they opened up their building to us to become a 24/7 shelter. And we took our most vulnerable guests and placed them there with a lot of help from Salvation Army to provide cots. Our meal service was transferred over to there. Our staff would do double duty back and forth. And so we were able to get about 200 men moved pretty quickly to other facilities and then to begin practicing social distance. And that has remained the same today. We are still practicing stringent social distancing. We've rearranged dorms. We've separated beds. We've limited the number of men that can be in our facility. And unfortunately, we've suspended volunteerism to a lot of our facilities as well. So we are continuing to offer protection to our men. Everybody wears masks. Everybody undergoes a health screening to determine if they are healthy or possible exposure to COVID-19. And so it goes. We continue this day in, day out, every day, 365 days a year right now.
Tracy Gorman, so many of us remember that week in mid-March when it became real, like Steve's talking about, and everyone seemed to be kind of scrambling to figure out what to do. Walk us through what that week was like for you.
Well, I was actually in Washington, D.C. that week meeting with rescue mission leaders from across the country, and the president gave his speech on that Wednesday evening, and I was scheduled to fly home on Friday, and so I actually hopped on a plane on Thursday and came home. And then on Friday that week, my staff and I sat down for quite a long time, and we developed what we called our emergency preparedness plan for COVID-19, which consisted of three levels of preparedness. And so from that time until now, we have moved in and out of those three levels. So, you know, somewhat like what has happened at other levels, maybe perhaps in state government where, you know, we've moved in and out of levels. We've done that here as well. And we developed that plan, and we just began to learn what social distancing was. I mean, those were all new phrases. Those were new concepts. And so we had to kind of roll with it and figure out, like Steve said up in Wheeler, what was that going to look like in a rescue mission? We have 222 beds. What was it going to look like for us? How are we going to accomplish that? How are we going to keep the place, you know, even cleaner than we normally do, which, you know, we pride ourselves on being a very clean facility. And so we just started working through those concepts and ideas. And I was so proud of my staff for just jumping in and helping us come to that point where we could serve the people that we do serve safely.
We're talking today about how the pandemic has impacted Indiana's homeless shelters, and we have representatives from Wheeler Mission in Indianapolis, Hope Ministries in South Bend, and Evansville Rescue Mission on the line with us today. Tracy Gorman is president and CEO of Evansville Rescue Mission. So, Tracy, it sounds to me like you kind of got going right away and you developed this big plan, but as we've mentioned already, not everybody knew exactly what was going on at that time. How did that plan and those tiers, those three tiers that you kind of worked with, how did that evolve as the weeks wore on?
Well, as I said, we had to determine, really get an idea, wrap our minds around what this whole thing was going to be. What was it going to look like? How were we going to respond? Were we going to be able to still let people come in to the facility from the outside and have meals with us? Were we going to be able to have the same number of people we normally would have? And we began to realize what that would mean for us. And so as we started to put the pieces together, it was just really amazing how I don't know how our staff just grabbed onto what this was going to look like for us and then ran with it. And so, you know, we started reducing the number of people that we could have in the building at one particular time, which is something that, you know, we didn't want to do. We didn't want to have to lower the number of people that we could serve at any given time, but we knew that we would need to do that. And so we just started running with the ideas and trying to share our concepts with other shelters and learn from them. Made a lot of phone calls across the country to other rescue missions, including up to Wheeler, find out what they were going to do so that we could be prepared to take care of the people in the best way that we could and to keep my staff, our volunteers, and our residents as safe as possible. That was our primary objective.
Steve Madison, give us the picture in South Bend in those early days as mid-March came around and this really became real for so many of us. Was the staff up there at Hope Ministries worried that you'd be leaving some of your population behind?
I think there was concern about what the service was going to look like going forward. I remember in those early days, the directors were meeting, goodness, daily, trying to figure this out as we went. I think we went 2 weeks with two-hour meetings every day. And at some points, I think we felt, are we being too aggressive? You know, do we need to shut things down the way it looks like we need to? I think fortunately, we went ahead and pursued a more aggressive approach. As has been shared, it was tough to ask volunteers to step back from coming to the facility. We all understand not just how valuable they are, but how important it is for volunteers to help us stay connected to our supporters and our community. Very soon, I think within a matter of a week, we shut down the doors to anybody from the outside coming in. We were still able to take donations of food and clothing. We would just, people would call when they arrived at the facility, and we'd send somebody out to pick it up from their cars. Our volunteers were very understanding, very grateful, and continue to be today. We probably only have about four or five individual high-impact volunteers who are back in the building. At this point, all of our larger groups, particularly the groups who provided meals for our residents and for our soup kitchen, they're still not in the building. We thought we were going to be able to bring them in here in September, October, but that's been pushed back now till at least the start of 2021. And to some extent, we're still just operating under that early inertia of trying to protect our people, both residents and staff.
Natalie Stafford, you're Wheeler Mission's Director of Volunteers, and as we've heard from Tracy in Evansville and Steve in South Bend and Steve Kerr at Wheeler Mission, where you work as well, the impact on volunteers was just enormous. What was on your mind when you began to realize the impact this would have on your volunteers?
Yeah, it was pretty intense just those first few weeks in March, just realizing what it would take to keep our guests, our staff, and our volunteers safe would likely mean suspending volunteer activity. And so we had a lot of long meetings, similar to what was shared before, but it wasn't until mid-April we made the call to suspend all volunteer activity at all of our facilities. And I think any day as a volunteer administrator that you have to suspend volunteer activity is really quite earth-shattering. I will say it wasn't necessarily because we didn't have people interested in continuing to volunteer. We had a lot of support and a lot of wonderful volunteers who continue to come in, even knowing and understanding the risk. And so we ended up needing to make that call on behalf of the ministry altogether, and really unprecedented. So I'm glad to say, we're still evaluating the needs daily. But as of June 1st, we were able to open up a few more volunteer opportunities. So we do have a good number of individuals serving on site with us. And we've also been really creative. My team has been really creative in coming up with ways to serve virtually. And
Natalie, we'll have to leave it at that for now. We'll be right back after this quick break. We're talking with a live panel of representatives from Indiana's homeless shelters. We'd love your input as well. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're with a live panel of guests talking about how the pandemic has affected Indiana's homeless shelters, and we welcome your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. We have with us Steve Kerr, Executive Vice President of Advancement at Wheeler Mission in Indianapolis, Tracy Gorman, President and CEO of Evansville Rescue Mission, Steve Madison, Director of Ministry Partnerships at Hope Ministries in South Bend. And when we left the last segment off, we were talking with Natalie Stafford, Wheeler Mission's Director of Volunteers. So Natalie, so sorry for the interruption, but when you left off, you were talking about your decision to suspend volunteer activity. This happened around April. So there were no volunteers working on site. Did you have volunteers completing work off site? And if so, what were they doing?
Yes, we did. We had volunteers step in a really unique capacity by helping prepare sack lunches from their own homes and churches, neighborhoods. And it's just been really incredible to see not just with sack lunches, but other virtual and remote volunteer opportunities for our community to really surround us with the support we needed during this time. And so what started in March with the sack lunches at first seemed very temporary to meet, this immediate need, but it still is continuing and is really one of our greatest blessings during this time to be able to provide that additional support for our staff, to provide the nutrition for our guests. And it's literally doing, what we are doing here by serving the homeless and making sure people are fed. So it's been really wonderful to see and be part of.
Steve Kerr, we're talking about sort of offsite operations, and you mentioned when we opened up the show that you had opened up a few offsite operations with churches and some other facilities. Have offsite locations kind of always been part of your plan at Wheeler Mission during, I guess, high capacity times or something like that? I mean, you're using them now to maintain social distancing among your residents, but under what circumstances have you ever had to use them before?
We always have had off-site locations during the winter, what we call winter contingency here in Indianapolis, when we have inundated with the numbers of men and women experiencing homelessness come to our doors and our buildings are full. So we have always used one local church to serve as an overflow facility for us for sleeping only. This has been totally unprecedented, where we've actually had to have 24/7 shelters set up in addition to what we normally do. It became a staffing issue. We actually had to hire temp from temp agencies to come in and do some work because we lost a number of staff to COVID through illness. And thank goodness we did not have any staff pass away through this time. But we lost a number of them to illness of COVID, particularly in the area of our food service. So getting food to these off-sites was a challenge, but with the help of, again, Marion County Board of Health, they opened sites. The city of Indianapolis helped identify sites. Hotels opened up, became quarantine sites for men and women experiencing homelessness who had tested positive would have a place to go. So this was totally unprecedented for us to have 24/7 hour shelters. But not unusual for us to serve as have overflow facilities.
Yeah, Tracy Gorman, when I think about when this came on, I recall how cold it was. This was mid-March. How much of a factor is that when it comes to the number of people you're housing there in Evansville?
Well, Matt, every year we have, during the wintertime, we have a time where we have a white flag, which just simply means that we allow more people in. We reduce maybe some of the normal barriers that we have, and we open up our building just a lot more freely because we want to get people in, obviously, off the streets. And so when this came along, you know, it was still chilly. And like we have been talking about, we found ourselves thinking, okay, how in the world are we going to be able to do this? How are we going to be able to feed the people that come here? We serve a lot of individuals, men, women, and children, for meal service every day. How are we going to be able to still provide for them? What are we going to be able to do for the people who are staying in the shelter? You know, we pride ourselves at the Evansville Rescue Mission of, you know, being a place of relationship building and connection. And when we had to start erecting safety glass, just like you'd find any place else in the community that was a barrier, we hated that. And we didn't like, you know, having to put those things in place. But again, like I said earlier, our big thing was we wanted to make sure that everyone was going to be safe. And so that's why we wanted to go the extra mile, to make sure that we had a plan in place and that we would follow that plan, and that we would keep everyone as safe as possible and still provide a high level of service to our clients. That was so important to us.
Tracy, under no circumstances would anyone ever think that this is what we're going through is easy, but would it have maybe been easier if it came on when things started to warm up a little bit and we didn't have to scramble so much during that sort of winter time? Or would it have been hard regardless of when it happened?
I think it would have been hard regardless of when it happened, but there was no doubt that, you know, in the back of our minds, and I'm sure that up in Indy and up in South Bend, same thing. We knew that there were vulnerable individuals that that we needed to still take care of. We knew that there were still hungry people that still needed food, and there were people that needed shelter. And so that's one of the reasons why, as soon as I got back into town, our staff sat down, developed that plan, because we wanted to make sure that we could do everything that we could do to not leave anybody out. And to do our best to not allow anyone to remain vulnerable. And so, yeah, I think it would have been rough any time, but goodness, still in March, you know how the weather can swing from, one day to the next in the Midwest. And we certainly were experiencing that here, just like they were throughout the rest of the state.
Steve Madison, in addition to housing, shelters typically offer programming to help get residents back on their feet. How did programming at Hope Ministries in South Bend have to change initially?
Yeah, that was one of the most painful parts of this whole process, was that as you begin to create social distancing and isolating those who are at risk and all of those things that went along with our efforts, and I'm sure I speak for my colleagues as well, the most difficult part was in the act of creating that social distancing, particularly in those first couple of months, our standard programming had to be put to the side. And, we like to believe that we're not, we're not a shelter, that we're a place of healing and programming. And when the programming was put to the side in those early days, trying to figure out how we were going to make this work, how we were going to keep people safe, that was the difficult part, knowing that really all we were providing at that point was a place for people to live out of the cold and to get their meals, but we were not running our standard programming. And it went against our DNA, and there was a lot of dissonance about that. Now, fortunately, we've been slowly able to bring a lot of that programming back, not all of it, but a lot of that programming, so we feel more like ourselves again. But that was really difficult when the programming had to be put to the side.
We're talking about how the pandemic has impacted Indiana's homeless shelters. We have representatives from Wheeler Mission in Indianapolis with us, also Evansville Rescue Mission, and we're talking with Steve Madison, Director of Ministry Partnerships at Hope Ministries in South Bend. So when you say that programming has started to ramp back up a little bit, what programs, I guess, got the what programs, I guess, were important enough to bring back, and what does that look like now?
Relationships are so essential to the work that our residents are doing, trying to put their life back together and to arrive at a place of stability in their life. And our residents can't do that on their own. They need the help of the staff. And of course, we're missing the volunteers who come in and support us in that area too. Some of the addictions counseling that's going on, both in larger groups and in smaller groups. Hope has been a site for Alcoholics Anonymous and Celebrate Recovery. And so those groups haven't been meeting in our building. So this entire support network, which is so vital, was really missed. And it's those relationships, it's those connections. It's that day-to-day systemic relationships and communication that's so, so vital to that path towards stability.
Natalie Stafford, are you having anyone volunteer virtually? How could they do that, and what are they doing?
Yeah, I mentioned one way that people have been serving virtually or remotely is through providing stack lunches. But we've also had people help with organizing donation drives and in-kind items that we need, not just the toiletries and the socks in the underwear, but also the COVID specific items like masks and hand sanitizer and Lysol wipes and those kinds of things. So we've had volunteers help in so many different capacities remotely. And that's been just great to see that community support come in so many unique ways that we wouldn't have expected unless this happened, at least in this specific scenario. So it's been great to have that happen.
Natalie, have you completely suspended, I guess, the kitchen there? Is the kitchen shut down, or has that come back in any way?
The kitchen at our shelter for men is open. We do have volunteers come and help serve lunch and dinner, as well as help with meal preparation out of that building. The other facilities in Indianapolis, we still have suspended volunteer activity. We've also opened up the kitchen for volunteer support in Bloomington at our Center for Men. And so there are a lot of ways for people to come serve on site with Wheeler Mission. The other opportunity that we've had volunteers come back on site for across our facilities is Bible study and chapel, especially at our Center for Women and Children. Those high-impact volunteers, I think Steve mentioned those before, but the relationship is so important for us at Wheeler Mission as well. And we've had a good number of those high-impact volunteers come back to serve because that is so important. And so that's been another area that we've had volunteers return.
Steve Madison, I'm going to come back to you very quickly. As I understand it, I mean, you know, outbreaks can be different, you know, depending on where you are. But as I understand it, kitchen operations have not exactly ceased in South Bend, or am I incorrect on that?
Well, certainly the act of being able to feed those in need in our community hasn't changed. Historically, what we have done is of course, we're providing the meals for our residents who are living with us there at Hope. But we've also, in kind of a second shift, have kept our dining room open, goodness, for 60 years for anybody in the community. And quite often, when I say that, I mean those who are living unsheltered are coming in for lunch and dinner at Hope every day of the year. And early in the spring, we felt that it was important to protect our residents and our staff in our building and to protect those, our guests coming in from the community for a meal to create a second place to serve to that population. And so we've got a space about a block and a half away from our building where we're continuing to provide lunch and dinner every day to many of the unsheltered. It's worked out fairly well. The fact that it's only a block and a half away means logistics aren't too bad. So we're able to create kind of grab and go meals and transport them over there and then deliver them to our guests at that site. Hard to believe that we've come full circle and now we're talking about whether amnesty or winter contingency or the white flag. We all have different terms for the act of providing a warm place for people to sleep at night who are unsheltered. We're wrestling with the site that we had used for weather amnesty is likely to be the site where we're going to move the meal ministry to as well. And so coordinating the meals and the weather amnesty is going to be a challenge that we're just starting to wrestle with right now.
Steve Kerr, over the course of this, I would imagine Wheeler Mission has shifted the way they're doing things based on how you've heard other shelters are adapting. What advice have you taken and how have you applied it?
Well, I think it's been probably the coolest thing that's happened. I know Steve and Tracy would agree is the network connections that have been made through this whole process of missions talking to each other, finding out what are you doing? Here's what we're doing. And how can we help you? What do you need in supplies that we may be able to provide you? It's just been a pretty amazing time to see organizations like ours working together. We've been in touch with national organization CityGate. I know Tracy has as well, to learn more about what's going on nationally. I know our president, Rick Alves, has been in connection with Center for Disease Control to find out how best we can protect our guests. So, you know, things like congregate dining, things we've never really had to think about before are now going not by the wayside, but we're changing how we do dining services and meal services. We're changing the way that we sleep men. It used to be, you know, men in bunk beds, and now we're thinking, you know, your head is up here and your feet are down here for the next gentleman, so they're not face-to-face in the dorm. So a lot of advice has been garnered through talking to other rescue missions across the country and have impacted the way that we do business.
Steve Kerr, have you heard of any shelters that have been particularly hard hit for one reason or another across the country and have sort of cautionary tales come out from there?
I think early on, I think Tracy and I were talking about Nashville, and Tracy actually may have better knowledge of what's going on at Nashville. Sounds like they have been hit fairly hard. I don't know, Tracy, if you want to pick this one up.
Tracy, got about a minute left. What happened in Nashville?
Sure, Steve. Early on, when all this was kind of settling in, I remember seeing that they had quite a large outbreak at the beginning, and I believe it was around 80-something individuals that they had to move to the county fairgrounds. And so I think they navigated that very, very well. They have great leadership down there. And then I know that the Union Mission in Los Angeles was particularly hard hit. They lost a couple of staff members and to death. And they had, I think, a really big outbreak there for a little while. But one of the things that we found, like Steve said, is missions have learned from each other, and we've all figured out from listening to one another, from learning from one another, how to navigate this.
There's a lot more to cover with our live panel talking about Indiana's homeless shelters and the COVID-19 pandemic. And we will take your questions and comments as well. Get them to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or call 866-476-3881 and leave a quick voicemail. 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on how Indiana's homeless shelters have had to adapt amid the COVID-19 pandemic. We're joined again by Steve Kerr, Executive Vice President of Advancement at Wheeler Mission in Indianapolis. Natalie Stafford is Wheeler Mission's Director of Volunteers. Steve Madison is Director of Ministry Partnerships at Hope Ministries in South Bend. And Tracy Gorman is President and CEO of Evansville Rescue Mission. There's still time to get your questions and comments in for this final segment. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. So, Tracy Gorman, your shelter, Evansville Rescue Mission, as we mentioned earlier in the show, you defined these three levels of, I guess, best practices. I'm assuming based on infection rates and the like. Can you remind us what those are, and under what circumstances would you shift from one level to another?
Sure. As we started with level one, and we activated that level on March 13th, we obviously we were checking everyone's temperature twice a day, which, by the way, we still do that every single day. We began giving out sack lunches in a grab-and-go program, like Steve up in South Bend talked about. And that number actually has grown to about 1,000 grab-and-go meals a week that we're giving out. And we started off with probably 300 a week. So that number has been growing. And then we were just, watching what was happening in our county. For instance, when we first had, and, I'm going way back here, when we first had the very first registered case, then we moved to level two, which suspended volunteers. We reduced some of our programming opportunities. We did away with resident passes where they, could leave for, overnight or multiple days or whatever it was. We were just trying to create a little bit of a bubble, if you will, to try to keep people as safe, healthy, and accountable as possible. And then level three was really basically a quarantine of the facility, and that was going to happen whenever we had our first case confirmed with residents or with staff. And so we have not had to stay at level three. We've been able to move back, but we did for a period go into level three. We do have some volunteers coming to the rescue mission, but not to our men's shelter per se. We're using them throughout the rest of the organization. So we're working back and forth between the levels, and we've found that this has just served us so well to have a plan, know what the plan is, educate the staff on what the plan is and the board of directors, and then stick with that plan. And that plan has served us so incredibly well. And as I said, we've been able to share that plan with other missions and other organizations. And I think we've learned from each other on how to navigate these unprecedented times.
I'm going to assume that you're at level two right now. Correct me if I'm wrong. And at what level have you spent the most time over this pandemic, would you say?
We're at level two, and we have spent probably the most, for sure, the most amount of time at this level where some of our services are curtailed or altered. And like Steve Kerr was mentioning, you know, we had to go in and reset the beds. You know, this person's head's over here, this person's feet are over here. And then through attrition, we lowered the number of residents that were in the building. And so we've just been camping out at level two, and, you know, so very, very thankful that we have been able to continue to help a large, large number of people. And that's been our goal all the time. And I know that the other guys and Natalie would say the same thing. We just want to help people.
Steve Madison, this has been going on for such a long time. Has anyone begun to slip up? Have you had to remind your staff, your volunteers, your residents there in South Bend to keep up their guard?
Yeah, just 2 weeks ago, we had a little bout of complacency in the building. An email went out somewhat tongue-in-cheek wondering, have we changed our mask policy? We had noticed there'd been about 3 or 4 days when people weren't being very attentive to that, residents and staff for that matter. And, you know, I think it was just the accumulation of all the time. And you know, we all know how everybody's wrestling with this in different ways and sees it in a different light. And so we just had to kind of put our foot down again and say, this is serious. This is important. Let's get back on board. And so for about 3 days, we were dealing with some issues there, but we're back on board. People are still taking it seriously, but it does get hard to maintain your vigilance over this length of time in a place like our missions.
Steve Kerr, let's talk about money. What about the economic impact? How much has this affected your ability to fundraise?
You know, I've never, obviously none of us have ever done fundraising through a pandemic. Historically, presidential election years are not the best time to fundraise. We have been overwhelmed by the generosity of our donors. We've done a few extra things, some video communications with our donors. We had the riots in Indianapolis simultaneous. We sent out some videos about that as well. But the outpouring of support from our donor base has literally, to me, been overwhelming. I've been at Wheeler going on 27 years and in fundraising for almost 37 years, and I've never experienced generosity like I'm experiencing, like we're experiencing right now. People care, and I pray it's the same way it is for my coworkers across the state, but it's just so evident that people care and are truly moved by the needs of our organization and the needs of those experiencing homelessness, that they have been very generous, not just in money, but in phrase. We've learned phrases like PPE. Never thought we'd ever talk about that before, but how many masks that our donors have made for us. Friends of the organization who said, how many masks you need? We're going to make you 100. We're going to make you 200. Local distilleries changing the way they do business and donating hand sanitizer to us. It's just been an amazing season for us. It's been such a blessing to see the outpouring of warmth from our community.
Tracy Gorman, Steve's talking about Indianapolis. How does Evansville compare on the fundraising and donor front?
I've long said, Matt, that there is no more generous community than Evansville, Indiana. And you know, I am just so blessed, just like Steve talked about, with the way that our community has come around us. And they realized how important it was for them to walk beside us and to help us care for individuals who would so often just, you know, be left behind or forgotten, especially in a time like this. And, you know, like Wheeler, we've experienced massive generosity from our community, from, like, you know, like Steve said, the masks that people have made, dropping off supplies that we've needed for the grab-and-go meals. And honestly, the list goes on and on. But the amazing thing is, I think that most people are truly interested in helping other people. And during this time frame, we've been able to see that so beautifully articulated and lived out right in front of our eyes. And we've had a front row seat to see just the amazing generosity that humanity has to offer. And I have personally just been so blessed to see that happen and so grateful, so very, very grateful for the people of Evansville.
Today we're talking with a live panel of guests about how the pandemic has affected Indiana's homeless shelters. We have representatives from shelters in Indianapolis, Evansville, and South Bend. Steve Madison represents Hope Ministries in South Bend. Steve, what about your funding situation? It sounds like donors and people who care about the homeless population in Indiana have really kind of rallied. Has Hope Ministries in South Bend there been able to keep up on that front as well?
Well, I tell you, it's really exciting to hear Steve and Tracy share about their support. Exciting because we echo that here. Our places, our people have not been forgotten at all in the midst of all this stress. And I think it's fair to say that that maybe people are even more concerned about the people that we care for. And so, yes, our support has remained strong. We've seen a growth in online giving in the midst of all of this, and people continue to donate. You know, one of the things we were concerned about is, you know, we serve about 120,000 meals out of our dining room, and about almost 40% of it is donated, particularly by local churches and organizations. And our fear was that when we said that we couldn't take volunteers anymore in the building, that that when the volunteers didn't come, the food wouldn't come either. And we've been so blessed that that almost all of those churches who would have brought the food and cooked it with our kitchen staff, while they can't come in the kitchen, they still bring the food. And so we've not seen a drop off in donations. We've not seen a drop off in the food that people bring to us. And so we're blessed, just like my colleagues in Indy and Evansville.
Natalie Stafford, money is one thing. Time is.
Matt.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Matt. We certainly don't want to mislead our listeners. The need is still there, and actually the need is still great. We've had to purchase a number of personal protection equipment. We've had to hire temp services. So, yeah, the donations have been strong, but the need has also grown through the pandemic.
And I think it's probably fair to say, Steve, that the need is only going to grow when you're going to need to spread out even more as the colder months are coming on. Natalie, I'll go to you. I mean, how much is that forefront on the minds of people there at Wheeler Mission on as we look forward to the holiday season and colder months?
Yeah, we're definitely reevaluating, you know, weekly, even on a daily basis, just looking at what our needs are, what our guests needs are, and going from there, really trying to have volunteers serve in meaningful ways, both for the volunteers and for our guests, of course. And so as we learned in 2020, it's difficult to predict the future ever, but especially this year. And so it really is just a day-by-day process and just looking at that need and collaborating as a entire ministry and just seeing, you know, where do we need the extra help? Where do we need the volunteer support? And then directing that way.
Steve Kerr, how much does money come into the picture when you think about things like offsite locations, the need to expand in order to accommodate social distancing and a drastically increased population because of colder weather?
Yeah, it is substantial, Matt, just because, like you mentioned, we've got to provide services for offsite, which means, like I said earlier, hiring more staff. We have to provide more meals and have those meals transported. We have to use more vehicles to move people and meals around during this time. We have a lot of our staff who have doubled up on their tasks. Early on, many of us were sent home to work from home remotely. Our frontline staff could not do that, and they put in tons and tons of overtime hours. And so, yeah, financially it did have an impact on us, and it still is going to continue. We're going to go from COVID, we're going to remain in COVID, and go right into winter contingency simultaneously. So that's going to be a challenge, I believe, in the fourth quarter and the first quarter of 2021.
Tracy Gorman, how much will collaboration between shelters come into play as we head into the winter months? Is there much collaboration among shelters there in Evansville? Do you keep in contact with each other?
Oh, absolutely. And I just believe that collaboration is so essential. You know, a lot of times we end up caring for the same individuals, organization to organization to organization, and being able to talk to one another and to plan with one another so that we don't duplicate services, but rather so we are meeting the felt needs that individuals do have. Being able to communicate with one another is so important. And I would just encourage all of your listeners who are involved in programming like this, be sure that you do reach out and collaborate and communicate with other agencies that are doing the same or somewhat similar missions that you have. And then also just, you know, get involved. Find a way that you can be involved as an individual. A lot of the shelters and the rescue missions across the state, even in the midst of all that's going on, they still so desperately need your assistance in many, many ways. And hopefully they're articulating that to the communities so the community members know how they can best be served and to serve.
Just a few minutes left. Steve Madison, if you could just paint a picture of the population. It's a vulnerable population. It is one that can have a number of issues, mental health, physical health, but it's also one I'm sure that has surprised you with their resilience to deal with the number of things that life has sent their way. How do they seem to be dealing with this right now?
I think the individuals that I'm seeing and talking to have approached this with a large degree of optimism. Spent some time over at our offsite facility where we're feeding, and you know, they're in the midst of being unsheltered and they're wrestling with addiction and untreated mental health. But in the midst of all of that, they are resilient. They are working hard. It's a tough place to be, but in many ways they've gone through a lot. They're going through a lot, and I admire them.
Steve Kerr, about 30 seconds left. You're heavily involved in the fundraising efforts for Wheeler Mission. How much catch up will you have to play in 2021?
I think probably quite a bit, particularly if our number one fundraiser, our Thanksgiving Day run, which is the 50th largest running event in the country. If that does not get approved for a live event, that's about $1 million day for us. So we are going to be offering a virtual event and trying to recoup some of those losses. But I think 2021 will be a year of catch up for us. Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for the great work that they're doing and their insight today. Steve Kerr is Executive Vice President of Advancement at Wheeler Mission in Indianapolis. Steve, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Natalie Stafford is Wheeler Mission's Director of Volunteers. Natalie, thanks to you as well.
Thank you so much. It was great.
Tracy Gorman is President and CEO of Evansville Rescue Mission. Tracy, all the best.
Hey, thanks so much, Matt, and to you too.
Steve Madison is Director of Ministry Partnerships at Hope Ministries in South Bend. Steve, we really appreciate it.
Glad to help. Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Find our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe so you never miss one. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.